This is Kate Harness with 307net Radio, and today I'm joined by Julie Heil and Sarah Sexton. Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Good morning.
And we're going to talk today about white canes and two things. There's White Cane Awareness Month in October, but also there's a safety day, the sort of the climax of the month, I guess, on Sunday, the 15th of October. So I did a little research, and White Cane Day is almost 60 years old, and it's kind of quite established, and I think people are familiar with a white cane and seeing somebody with a white cane. But can you tell me a little bit about white canes in this community? And Sarah, I know that you have particular experience with that because you were fully sighted and now are completely blind, vision impaired. Whatever is the correct term, and please correct me when I'm wrong here, but can you tell me a little bit about the white cane and what it symbolizes to you, not necessarily how you use it, but what it symbolizes to you?
Absolutely. So this white cane here it's my independence. Like, it, as soon as I was taught how to use it properly, it really opened up my ability to be independent.
So can you just tell us a little bit about that? I mean, how do you use it properly?
Well, thanks to Miss Julie, I learned that you have to hold it basically in front of your belly button, and you swing it left to right in cadence with your step. So it's, you know, you have to understand how that works and how fast you walk, you know, because you don't want to swing it too slow and miss something and walk into something or trip over something. And I have a roller ball on the tip of mine, and there's different types of tips, and my roller ball stays in contact with the ground constantly. Some people have a marshmallow tip that you tap left and right with, and it's just preference. I prefer the roller ball, and it tells me everything. I can feel every bump and stick and piece of tree trash and curb, and it allows me to travel independently.
And you were telling me just before we started recording that you actually went off to the grocery store on your own with your cane. But you also have a dog.
I do. I have a guide dog.
So how do those two work together? What are the benefits and differences between them?
So a guide dog has a brain. And that brain, you know, can smell things and wants to sniff people sometimes and needs to, you know, check out this pebble on the ground. However, he also warns me of overhead obstacles that my white cane does not. So if there's like a low-hanging tree branch, he'll stop, and so I don't crack my face into it. However, with my white cane, I find it with my face. So that's the difference, is he, you know, he can look up and see, and he'll stop me. He does very good.
So do you use both together?
You cannot. Nope. Okay. One mobility aid at a time. Mm-hmm.
And how do you pick which one you want to use at any given time? How do you decide?
You know, it's personal preference. Because I learned my white cane first and I became so attached to it, I really like using it. And I always have it with me when I'm with him. Always. Because what if he gets injured or runs off or something happens? Then I will not have a way to get around, right? So I always have my white cane. And it just depends. If it's icy and his feet are slipping on the ice, I know it isn't time to take him out.
Okay.
No. Right.
Thank you. So, Julie, what's your interest in? I know you as a teacher from New West, but you also have a qualification in vision issues.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what the correct term is.
The term is orientation mobility specialist, and it just came from not knowing how to help at the beginning students that had visual impairments, and just wanting to have more information from that. And I started that in 2017, and then got certified and. Now I work with all the students in Johnson County that have a visual impairment, and also adults in the region. Sometimes I'm hired to work with adults.
So what kind of an issue is it in Johnson County? You have some students right across all grades and ages?
Yeah, in our school district we have currently 7 students that have a visual impairment of some degree.
Wow.
It ranges from almost no sight to partially sighted, and some of them use a cane and some of them don't. Sometimes it's just modifying their curriculum so that it's more accessible to them, or they have more assistive technology, or it's very individualized. And then in the adult community, we have probably half a dozen adults, many of them seniors who have lost their vision due to diabetes or other medical issues that affect our sight. And I have met all of them. We have a vision group through the senior center that is a support network. But Sarah is really the only, I think, person that is not a senior, maybe, that has lost her vision and lives in Buffalo.
So, Sarah, you lost your vision from a medical issue, but you are working full-time. You have a family. And you appear to be completely on your game. How's the transition from being, fully sighted to being completely blind? What have you learned from that experience? And what would you like people who still have their vision to know?
Right. You're so sweet to say that. I'm trying very hard to get back to baseline, you know, where I was. And, you know, I guess the best thing I can say about what I would like people to know, because I am definitely guilty of the things that I'm experiencing, like when I was sighted. I know that I violated people's space by thinking I was helping. Always ask for permission first to help somebody. And just because I say, no, I don't need your help right now, doesn't mean if you see me again later, I'll say no again. You know, permission is important. And if you don't ask for permission and you just grab my elbow and try to guide me somewhere, I'm probably not going to be very pleasant.
So, and I think this is a lot of the thought behind White Cane Awareness, is really understanding what is being helpful and what is being intrusive.
Correct.
And so what can you, how would you like people to treat you when they see you? To talk to you?
Yeah, well, and introduce yourself. Hi, my name is so-and-so. Do you need help? And I will probably say, no, thank you. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for asking.
So I feel I have to ask you, I'm curious, how was it relearning things that, you know, that you were doing every day, sighted, and then now you cannot see what you're doing? How was the relearning process?
You know, some things were very easy, and some things were super hard. Learning with my light cane was super scary, but I had Julie was a great teacher and continues to be a great teacher, and was very supportive and told me, yeah, it is scary. You have a right to feel scared. If you're about to walk across the street with no vision, you should be scared, but you can do it. So that was probably the hardest, was just being outside around other people and vehicles.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you are fully sighted, you know, we have no appreciation for how uneven and different just simple things like a curb can be.
Yeah.
You know, it may be 3 inches high on one end of the street, and then it may be 2.5 or 1 inch high and with a slant and a crack in the the sidewalk and so on. And presumably those are all things that are very high in your mind of being aware of, Sarah.
Yep, that's right.
How about working? How do you manage with that?
You know, there are so many great pieces of technology that, you know, allow me to work. I use JAWS, which stands for Job Access with Speech, and it reads everything on my laptop to me. And I navigate using the tab and the arrow keys. If I didn't have that technology, I wouldn't be able to work. So that's how I'm able to work.
And so I know what you do. Maybe you'd tell everybody what your job is.
Yeah. I'm a case manager here at Compass. I help people locate resources and make sure that stable housing is, you know, the primary function of our meetings, because stable housing means safe families. And that's our goal here at Compass, is to make sure the families are safe and housed. And I also make sure to refer people to other agencies if we can't help.
So, I mean, by anybody's standards, that sounds like quite an involved job, but to do that being completely blind sounds incredibly daunting and challenging.
You know, it's okay. It's, you know, it's not, it really is just knowing how to interact with people and knowing how to winnow out like what they're truly looking for. And some people just need to come and just vent, you know, and be frustrated and hear somebody say, yeah, dude, that sucks. like, I can't even imagine, you know. So just being empathetic and then also saying, and here is a list of all of these resources, right, that you can call independently. Like, call them on your own. You can do it. If you need some emotional support, I am here for that. And just telling them that they're capable, you know. And sometimes all you need to hear is that I believe in you. You can do it.
Yeah. Yep. So thank you. So, Julie, you went through quite rigorous training. You were saying that, you know, you had to actually walk across streets blindfolded to learn how to use the white cane. What did you learn from your experience, knowing that you weren't actually vision impaired, but from your experience of getting your master's degree?
I think that what I learned is that we have a lot of other senses that we can rely on to help us be oriented to our environment. And so I learned how to really rely on my hearing and all my tactile senses. What you find is that you hear things that you didn't hear before. Like, you can tell what kind of truck is coming up, or if someone is riding a bike or a skateboard. Like, when you don't have your vision, you can pick up on those little details. Sarah and I have spent a lot of time listening to traffic to try to figure out what kind of vehicles there are. Now, electric vehicles are tough because they don't idle, they don't make a sound.
Yes, so that is surprising to me that that's a thing, but of course it is. You know, and there are many more electric bikes around now. I mean, you could hear a skateboard coming towards you, for example, or just a regular push bike, but an electric vehicle is almost silent, whether it's a bike or a car. So that's obviously going to be a challenge. And, you know, isn't that it's new technology that's not only brought you all these benefits, Sarah, of different programs and so on, but it also brings some other stuff too.
Hindrance.
Yeah.
I think what I learned is that people are not as aware as they should be of their environment when they're in a car. So a lot of people will pull up into a crosswalk, and if someone is using their cane or their dog to cross the street, then that could be a troublesome. And people are looking at their phones a lot. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing that I think Sarah and I both would like to see change, is just to be a little bit more... I mean, I'm guilty of it too. Like, I come to a stop sign and I'll check my phone really quick. But what that does is distracts you from the whole environment. People honk at Sarah sometimes and or yell, and that is so rude and disorienting in itself.
Why do you think they do that? Is it to let you know that they're there, Sarah? Is that the impression that you get, or is why do people do that? It seems very strange.
Well, I think in Buffalo specifically, people honk to say hello.
Okay.
And it startles the daylights out of
me. I'm sure it
does. I'm just like, oh, Lord. Yeah. And then I think, am I in the way? Like, am I doing something wrong? Like, why are you honking at me?
Yeah.
And Julie would be like, don't worry about it. Just keep walking. And I'm like, okay, thank you. Yeah.
Just a lack of understanding, I think. I mean, I don't know what the intention is, but sometimes people yell, hey, Sarah. And it's like, she can't.
I don't know who it is. So
really what you're saying is, if people are interfacing with you, you'd like them to announce themselves.
Yeah.
And you'd like them to tell you where, can you tell where they are just from where their voice is coming now? Is your hearing sensitized enough to know where they are?
For the most part.
Yeah.
For the most part. Like, if there's a lot of sound, it is really disorienting, especially if I'm actively using my white cane, because then I'm focused on that. Like, sitting here, obviously, like, I can tell where you are. I can know where Julie is. But, yeah, I mean, announcing yourself usually gets me to turn my head to the right direction so I can listen.
So we've talked about, you know, kind of just people having respect, and that, you know, it's just that you have one sense that is not working and that the rest of you is just as sharp and functional as you ever were. Is there anything else that you would like people to know? Or maybe some encouragement for people who may be losing their sight.
Right. That's a very good question. You know, just to look for the support people in this community, because we are here. It is really hard to find each other. It has taken me years, literally years, to find support people here. And I'm getting there. So just, you know, keep looking, keep reaching out, and... I guess keep your chin up, as they say. You just gotta keep looking.
Yes, and I think, you know, there are some associated issues with not being able to see. I mean, disturbed sleep is probably, you know, one thing. You know, you just have no sense of night and day. Your circadian rhythm presumably is a little off. And, you know, there are so many things that we probably don't think about.
Right. I mean, for some people that's true. That isn't true for me. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I've never had that issue, but I have heard of other people with blindness having that problem. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know when it's nighttime. For sure.
Your eyes, like, okay.
Well, you have a full and busy day. So.
Yeah, and a child, so it definitely, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. you do. Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. And I would imagine there's been a lot of need for your family to adapt.
Yeah, and the boys are trying. It's tricky, you know, it's hard, but they try very hard, and I love them for it. So, yeah.
So is there anything else that we should talk about around white cane awareness and so on? And the issues
of
being...
I think one of the things that we could talk about is that it'd be great if people could just be stewards of their sidewalks and their bushes and trees.
Yes.
You don't really realize how impactful that can be unless you're walking with it.
And that's not necessarily true just of people who are visually impaired.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in a wheelchair of some sort if you just have some kind of mobility issue...
Right.
Those things can just simply get in the way and make it harder than it needs to be.
Yep.
And I have been known to carry my pruners with me when I walk and take care of things myself, but it is really great for, I mean, we have really beautiful neighborhoods and not mm-hmm. such great sidewalks, right? Mm-hmm. So, depending on where you live in Buffalo, we really appreciate the people who are taking care of the curb and the
low-hanging branches. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, nice.
And, of course, it would be remiss not to mention that we have Main Street being completely torn up next year, and hopefully that's going to... You've been able to kind of see some of those plans and just sort of double-check, and hopefully it'll be a much easier place for you to navigate, Sarah.
Fingers crossed. Mm.
The Department of Transportation has actually been really great to work with. We both have worked with them.
Yep.
And spoke at City Council, Sarah spoke at City Council, just about improvements. And any time that there's a modification or a change in a street, they have to bring the street up to the standard that is currently existing for the Americans with Disability Act. So
mm-hmm.
They've already put in some accessible pedestrian crossing mm-hmm. signals that now will talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we asked them to increase the timing to cross the street from, I think they had it at 10 seconds.
Yep.
We asked them to put it at like 18. So
mm-hmm.
we practiced how long it took to get across the street and then gave that feedback. And they've been really accommodating to that. So.
And Sarah, do those things mm-hmm. make a big material difference to you?
Yes, because crossing four lines of traffic in 10 seconds as a sighted person, I mean, it's you got to really hustle.
Yes,
you know?
You do.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then so the white cane, I'm slower. And I want to make sure I'm not walking into the middle of the intersection, so I have to be super cognizant of where I'm going, so I'm just slower. And I don't want to get run down by traffic. I want to make it safely across.
Yeah. I mean, even in Buffalo, Wyoming, where we kind of like to think that, you know, we just have three stoplights and
mm-hmm.
we go slow and, you know, we pay lots of attention.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought, you know, even so, even here, those are all things that are probably quite challenging in a way that they don't need to be necessarily.
Correct. Well, and it's not just me. I mean, there's children that use those crosswalks,
mm-hmm.
and those kids can't get across in time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my little guy wants to walk to school by himself, and I'm like, you know what, buddy, let's wait until all of those are proper, because right now they're not, and I don't want you using a broken crosswalk. It just scares mom.
Yeah.
Know? And there's preschoolers, you know, like real little kids, so it's not just me. It's a community thing.
Yeah.
Everybody needs it to be accessible. Yeah.
Well, Sarah, Julie, thank you very much indeed for bringing white cane awareness to us, and also for just that insight, that glimpse into some of the things that maybe we just don't even consider.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.